Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week,
there's still, for certain parts of society, maybe a bit of a block around feeling, actually, this is just something that I need to keep up, just like I do my physical health. It doesn't need to wait until you've hit rock bottom for that to become relevant.
If we all embrace that a little bit more, that so much about what we did, the decisions that we made were based around how we feel, then I think we would all be on a much more even playing field, if you like, right from the off.
Sometimes people feel, oh, I open up that kind of Pandora's box almost, and I'm going to have answers for what comes. Well, no. A lot of the time, people just need to be heard.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Hey everyone, welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle. Thanks for joining us today. A little bit of a strange week this week, because as we move into February, we've got this week's show featuring Joe Potter, policy director at the Samaritans. And then on Thursday, it's Time to Talk Day. So I've got the guys from Time to Change talking about the day and our involvement in it. I've got them lined up for next Monday's show. But what I'll probably do is I'll probably put the podcast out on Thursday, just so you can hear it on the day itself, Time to Talk Day. So Mental Health Monday, as normal today. Next Monday's show, I'll probably put it out a bit earlier just so people can subscribe. So there won't be necessarily a new podcast on Monday. It'll have come out on Thursday of this week. Does that kind of make sense? Just follow the numbers on the episodes and it'll all kind of fall into line. I hope you're well. Thanks for joining us today. Got the news this week that we were continuing this sort of lockdown period until the 8th of March. I've had so many different conversations with people about how they're feeling at the moment, and I'll go on to that in next week's episode, because I put something on social media which just exploded, and I was really, really surprised by how big it actually became. But I'll talk about that more a little bit later on. This week's show is about speaking to men, and speaking to men and creating environments for men so you can really engage with them in regard to their mental health. There's a guidebook being put together by Samaritans, and Joe Potter will set out what that is. I know that if you are a man or if you work for an organization that deals with men, this is going to be absolutely crucial, but there's plenty of general conversation in there as well. As ever, if you want to join our Facebook Mental Health Monday group, you are more than welcome. Feel free to just sort of apply, and I'll just click yes, you can come in, where we share episodes, articles, people can post different things on there about events that they're involved in as well. That's all to come. You can be part of it on the Facebook group as well. And also, if you're able to go onto social media and very kindly share the fact that you're listening to Mental Health Monday, that will be really helpful as well. Just gets the word out there that the podcast is here. It's free. It'll always be free. And you can check it out online. Joe Potter is this week's guest for Mental Health Monday. This guidebook and handbook is going to be really, really crucial for so many people. Details at the end of where you can get it, but also I'll put a link in the podcast description as well, so you can check that out no matter who you are or where you are. Some really, really crucial stuff in there.
So last year we undertook some research, a report called Out of Sight, Out of Mind. And what that report found was that men had been struggling with mental health, with suicidal feelings, with a feeling of disconnection for many, many years in a lot of cases. But support hadn't arrived till they'd really hit rock bottom. And that was for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons for it was that the available support, the kind of well-being support, hobby-based, community-based kind of sort of help that's out there, didn't seem relevant to them until they had hit rock bottom. So we understood that there needed to be something to fill that gap in terms of the services are there, but are they appealing to men early enough? So the handbook that we've produced is an attempt to support those services that already exist and future services to appeal to men sooner, earlier, before the onset of a crisis.
I think so much of this, in terms of the conversations I've had, Joe, is still very much based around a generation's idea about what mental health is and the stigma that comes around. But actually, you only need to look at the stats to know that beyond the stats are individuals who are really struggling as well. And a real issue there of men of a certain age who you may presume know what's going on in life and are comfortable in their own skin. Very very much not the case. Very much a cohort of gentlemen there who potentially are really struggling without us potentially even knowing it.
Indeed, and I think this, how we think about mental health, some of the men that we spoke to for this handbook expressed a kind of anxiety about getting involved in a general well-being service when they've got other commitments, maybe around childcare, their work. And it seems that mental health and just taking good care of yourself falls quite far down that list. And it's not until faced with an emergency, faced with a crisis, that suddenly mental health takes on the kind of necessity in a person's life that it should. So I think there's something, as much as there have been over the last few years, a lot of progress actually about the way we talk about mental health, think about mental health, you know, across ages and genders. There's still, for certain parts of society, maybe a bit of a block around feeling, actually, this is just something that I need to keep up, just like I do my physical health. It doesn't need to wait until you've hit rock bottom for that to become relevant.
In terms of those conversations and the men that you spoke to, did you get a sense there were just simply undiagnosed factors in place there, or were there issues in their lives that potentially may have caused them to reach that point? I'm thinking marriage breakdown, job losses and things like that.
So the men on the whole that we spoke to for this, for the handbook, were maybe at the start of a negative trajectory. We wanted to reach men, find out what they wanted before that point of crisis. So the men that we spoke to had maybe suffered, they'd had some change in their working pattern. They were on the cusp of potentially a negative trajectory. Those are the kind of, but we know that often when men get to middle age, if they do experience a relationship breakdown, if they do lose their job, that happening in middle age can be particularly difficult, partly because men have spent so much time building up their relationship, their job. They put a lot of time, effort, and they might struggle to see how they rebuild their lives after something sort of catastrophic happens in that middle age. But also what we know from previous research is that often men in middle age have fewer support networks than the women around them. They might be more dependent in a way on their partner. So if there is a relationship breakdown, they have fewer sort of support networks that they might be able to, you know, very close support networks compared to women that they might be able to draw upon. And therefore, the breakdown of those structures they've already known can be particularly catastrophic.
But these are our, you know, these are our brothers, these are our dads, these are our granddads, these are our work colleagues, these are our mates. How do we change that narrative, the narrative that it's all over because I've had a relationship breakdown in middle age? How do we change that narrative that says, actually, there is a new opportunity, there is hope for you?
I suppose it's about rallying round people, but also having conversations that we might find uncomfortable. If we've had a relationship, and we're talking in broad brush strokes here, right? There will be many men in their middle age who are willing to talk. I've actually got a family member very much in this bracket, recently bereaved, who I had never had a conversation like that on an emotional level. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What does the future hold? How are you now going to cope? These are things we'd never, ever discussed, but we've kind of been forced into this situation. And actually, probably I would have underestimated this person's capacity to have those conversations. So I think it's about, let's not make assumptions. I think we have a cultural kind of, there's an assumption within our culture that men don't want to speak. Men, it's hard to talk to men. Men find it hard to talk. They talk about all sorts of things all the time. It's about us also being willing to have those conversations, potentially uncomfortable conversations with them.
And I think as well, the more you have those conversations, the less uncomfortable they are. I think that's another thing in terms of, you know, having those conversations early on before a crisis, so that if a crisis does come around, it's just the same conversation, but the situation has changed. One of the things I find fascinating, Joe, is that I've done a lot of work in terms of trying to raise awareness of organisations that do things through either football clubs or five-a-side football, men's sheds projects as well. I've heard as well about some fantastic work up in Scotland in regard to things like the Forestry Commission and dealing with men who had previously worked on, you know, shipyards, which were no longer viable for them sort of economically. And they've spoken so warmly of the process and not just the actual thing that they were involved in. But in doing so, in almost being tricked into having a conversation around their mental health, and I mean that in a positive way, once they then get their heads around the fact that actually it's also about their mental health, they've almost become evangelical about talking about mental health and say, no, come here, let's learn how to fix something. Let's do this. Let's chop down a tree. Let's plant a few trees. Let's have a game of five-a-side football. And then let's talk about our feelings. Absolutely. They it's just getting people through the door in the first place, though.
Yeah, so one of the key principles from the handbook, which we published yesterday, was this idea of using activities to facilitate conversation, because the men that we spoke to, they were clear, talking is important. Friendship and camaraderie and building relationships are important. All of these things are important. However, they might be facilitated, they might be made easier by having an activity, and to focus on a project, to focus on with other people, just to break the ice. And you know, you've sort of spoken about a lot of good examples there. One of the things though that we found was it's important not to pigeonhole men, and also think that all men want a football-based or a you know, pie in a pint, or all those things are valuable. But what the men told us they really wanted was a sense of purpose and a sort of, you know, that sort of project and something to contribute, and meaningful connections. It matters less, and they were less interested in necessarily what you might expect to be typical male, you know, activities to get involved in. It's that sense of purpose, it's that meaningful connection, which is what they're really looking for. The vehicle for that can be a number of different things.
Now, in terms of that, and the point you made right at the start about making sure you don't get to rock bottom before you sort of engage with any kind of service, how do we now strike that balance? Because what we've just talked about there is about men having hobbies and sort of friendship groups and also sort of safe spaces to talk about themselves. But you can't necessarily sort of dictate that to all men and say, you must take up a hobby and you must find friends that you can talk to. But at the same time, I guess as well, organisations that facilitate those sorts of conversations need to be aware that they can also play a role in creating a safe environment. That if they do have a five-a-side football, you know, organisation, that you could introduce issues around mental health awareness as part of your normal sort of weekly activities or about your normal conversations. And I think that's about the whole community playing its part, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And I think sometimes we can get caught up in the idea that we need to have mental health conversations and that they're somehow different from the other conversations that we have. I think also having faith that if you bring men together, you create the right environment, people feel sort of comfortable, they feel safe to talk about what the people will naturally talk about, what's going on for them. We can facilitate that, we can encourage it. But I think one of the things that came through in our research was men don't want to feel as if they're being fixed. I think we can maybe, you know, move past the thing of, or sidestep this issue where we say, right, time for mental health chat. It's like, get people talking about what's important to them, and naturally they'll start talking about things which are very closely aligned to what's going on for them and their well-being and their mental health. So Perhaps it's just about facilitating safe spaces, although that's a kind of a jargony buzzword itself that would probably turn a lot of, but facilitating spaces where people feel comfortable to talk, and acknowledging that this might not happen overnight, that it may well take some time, but having faith that with the right conditions, men will talk about what's important to them.
Let's talk about the organisations who are currently sort of providing services for people sort of up and down the country, wonderful organisations as well. What will they get from the handbook which will help them enhance the offer that they currently have?
Yeah, so many of the principles within the handbook are pretty common sense. Many organisations will feel like they're doing a number of them already. I think for some of them, it will just be refining. There is some sort of should do's, should not do's within it as well. So it's there's some practical examples that people may not have thought about before. And I think for some, it will be about refining what they're already doing. And for others, maybe challenging some of the assumptions that they've made about what men want. So I think we're hoping it's going to be a really helpful resource. But we also acknowledge that there's lots of good work going on out there already. I think it's just this coming down to this no one size fits all, you know, and that's a big takeaway from this. Not assuming that men will really need a load of coaxing into. It's more about create that environment. And we sort of say along activities, but create that environment.
I think the reason I raised that is because I spoke to someone who'd been asked to sort of liaise with an organization that were looking to create a sort of male friendly environment. And one of the suggestions was Sky Sports News on in the waiting room and a Formula One poster on the wall. And his response was, that would put me off because it would make me think that you were trying to appeal to me because I was a man as opposed to a human being, which I thought was really quite telling. But I think those sort of sweeping generalizations have almost got us into this situation in the first place. So we need to make sure we don't fall into those traps in the future as well. And in terms of the mistakes that people might make, that the should nots in terms of those conversations, what might they be? What might the traps be that people might fall into in terms of engaging with men in a certain way?
An assumption, I think sometimes men don't talk, you know, I think challenging that or going into, well, men don't talk, so let's sort of forget about that. Well, actually, you know, men do talk. So, you know, I think there's trying to move away from that assumption too. So I think it's really about treating people as individuals, also listening to what they want, not making too many assumptions about what men want, you know, before that happens. So, yeah, I think it's really about let's not treat people with a broad brush. Assume that they all want the same thing. Assume that they won't speak, because I think what we're finding is that they will, given the right environment.
Do you think in terms of the information that you're setting out in the guidance, do you think that sort of generationally it won't be required in the same way in the future? Is there something that we could be doing with boys now and children in general? Conversations that we can be have to make sure that when they get to a certain age, they're not falling down some of the rabbit holes that men are now, that they're not, you know, stumbling into some of the same traps. Is that something that we can set in motion now so that guidance around men in a crisis isn't required in the same level, because there's a level of resilience that they've been built up with as a result of better education, schools advice, great workplace environments and such like?
Absolutely. So I think that we are sort of seeing a cultural shift. And I should think that the men who we are currently concerned about have a different attitude towards mental health, talking about their feelings, than their fathers did. So I think we're seeing, but absolutely, education is really important. I think there's an acknowledgement, again, I think there's an acknowledgement amongst government when you sort of look at some of the policies that are going on in schools at the moment, that there needs to be more of a conversation around mental health. It's important, though, that, again, these aren't conversations about once you've hit rock bottom. They're conversations about how do you, on a daily basis, when things are okay, how do you keep your mental health ticking over as, you know, positive and well, way before reaching a crisis point. And so when times are tough, you know, young men and boys have those skills to draw upon, essentially, that when things are more tough.
What do you think those touch points might be in life where a man might be sort of told, hey, by the way, have you ever thought about signing up to a pottery class or one of these men sheds projects or picking up our hobby? You can't necessarily have a TV advert that says, men, get a hobby. We don't really need to explain why, but it probably will suit you in the future. Rather than waiting for those crisis points, I'm thinking like GP checkups, where, you know, you go for a check on something, your GP might actually say to you, oh, by the way, what else are you doing in life at the moment? Have you thought about X, Y, or Z? Is that the sort of thing that might sort of engage with men a bit more?
Absolutely. So in earlier research that we undertook, we found that there were a lot of missed opportunities where men were coming into contact with, for instance, where we were looking at men in sort of a lower income bracket, but men who had been struggling for a long time, who had visited their GP, who had maybe even gone to the job centre, who had interacted with lots of parts of a sort of system. And there hadn't been that extra conversation. You know, there'd been a conversation about the issue that a man might face there and then, often a practical issue. Maybe it's about them integrating another. And how are you in yourself? You know, using, I think, right across the system, right from school through to, you know, the workplace, having that part of the kind of general lexicon, you know, that we're talking about, that we're okay, you might be facing a very practical issue around your employment, for instance, which is much easier to talk about, I think, as this, you know, we can talk about this practical thing in front of us. I think then going a step further and saying, okay, and yeah, how are you within yourself? I think there are opportunities. Part of that is cultural, and part of that is about us checking in on our friends and our family. But there are also kind of more formalised structures that can happen in.
Yeah, here's where I get a little bit evangelical, because actually what you've just described there is something that I've absolutely fundamentally come to believe in that there is essentially mental health in absolutely everything. And, you know, two people get into a fight at work, you work out what the fight was about, but then you sit down individually with both of them and say, come on, what's going on? They then start to tell you that actually they've not been sleeping well. They're worried about something that's going on at home. They're worried about something else that's going on. They've been feeling a particular way for a particular length of time, and this is how it actually came out. And I think as much as anything, mental health in everything is almost like a culture which I think can come into a workplace, but it can also come into our home lives as well. It can come into our institutions, as you mentioned, you know, job centres. And I think if we all embrace that a little bit more, that so much about what we did, the decisions that we made were based around how we feel, then I think we would all be on a much more even playing field, if you like, right from the off, to have those conversations, then understand and empathise with other people in those circumstances as well. Like I say, that's where I get evangelical about the whole thing.
Well, I agree. And I think it's also about us not making assumptions about the kind of conversations that men are and are not going to be comfortable having as well. You know, I think those conversations might seem intimidating, but actually they need to become much more commonplace. I think also the idea that people thinking that people need to come up with solutions. You know, if you start a conversation like that, you need to come up with solutions. Actually, the whole thing that Samaritans is based around is being a listening ear, a non-judgmental listening ear. And a lot of the time, that's all people need. So, you know, I don't think sometimes people feel, oh, I open up that kind of Pandora's box almost, and I'm going to have answers for what comes. Well, no, a lot of the time people just need to be heard.
Yeah, and if we relate this back to the Samaritans and a phone call, I guess from your point of view, it's so much easier to have a conversation with somebody if you're able to say to them and tell us about, you know, the structures you've got around them. And they, if they have got structures, I guess it makes it easier in terms of, you know, asking them about that and then being able to speak about that. You must have a great deal of experience of people sort of ringing up who maybe don't feel like they've got that structure. And I'm not saying that the guidebook will eventually create less work for you, because that's not necessarily what it's all about. But it's about opening up that conversation and making sure that every aspect of everybody's life can put them in a better place.
Absolutely. And one of the things that men have been calling Samaritans and talking about during the pandemic has been a loss of coping mechanisms, a loss of what keeps them well. So, you know, what we're finding is lots of men do have those coping mechanisms. Lots of men know what works for them to keep themselves well. At the moment, that's being denied to them. But obviously, that's not positive. But in a way, we know that once, you know, gyms, you know, clubs, sports facilities, however people keep themselves well, once those things open up again, we shouldn't assume that that men just don't know how to look after themselves. We've got lots of evidence that they do. It's about us building in even more, you know, the whole of society building up that sort of those structures, supportive structures around people. And those conversations can be one way that kind of might spark in a person's mind, okay, yeah, I'm struggling a bit at the moment. Where else might I look? Where else might I look for sort of support? How can I build up the kind of supportive network around me of people, of activities, you know?
For men who are sort of at the start of their sort of mental health journey, if you like, Joe, who maybe haven't considered it before, what do you say to them in terms of steps that they may take to sort of improve their outlook as well and make them better sort of resource to sort of thrive in the future?
Reach out to people, I would say. Make sure that you've got a network of people wherever possible, trusted people who you feel that you can talk to, who you can rely on. You know, that you have sort of meaningful, and look after your relationships, you know, make sure that you have a group of people with whom you can confide, you know, and sometimes that will take time to build, but I think that's a really worthwhile. I think get involved in your local community, whether that is one of these sort of well-being groups, through whatever, however that resonates to you. Everything from a local sports group to an art group, you know, walking, whatever resonates with you. I think it's about making sure that there are opportunities and networks around you where you can talk about how you feel.
Now, just let us know where people can pick up the handbook, because in these sort of digital times, have you got sort of the, is there a digital version of it? Have you got a hardback? Do you do hardback versions? A real life version of the book?
We, at the moment, it's in digital form, but anyone that would like it, so it's on our website, samaritans.org.uk. It's under the policy section of our website. We're also more than happy to send copies out digitally to whoever's interested. And I'd also ask that people share it around their networks. You know, if people are listening to this interview think that it sounds like a useful resource, please do get in touch with Samaritans. Please share the handbook around your networks, because, you know, we're hoping that it's going to be an extremely practical and useful document.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's called Engaging Men Earlier, A Guide to Service Design, which sounds like it's, you know, very much focused on those services and rightly. But actually, from the conversation we've just had, Joe, it's very much about people, human beings and their feelings as well. So there'll be plenty in there. It's not going to be inaccessible for people in terms of its style, how it's written and so on.
Not at all. It's got the voice of men throughout it, you know, the men that we spoke to. It's really, it's there to help the design, the delivery of services, but it's got all sorts of kind of practical tips in there. And even for a person who might be accessing one of those services, it's got a lot that that might support and help those sort of thinking about how a person might keep themselves well too.
Absolutely. And I know many different organizations certainly who supported this podcast over the years who will be the first to download and check that out. Joe, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you speaking to us. I wish you all the best in terms of spreading that message as well. Fingers crossed sort of services up and down the country pick up the guidance that you're offering as well, but also that men start to sort of feel comfortable in those environments and continue to feel comfortable in those environments, seek new environments as well, and with a long-term aim of improving the mental health of men up and down the country. Thanks for speaking to us on this week's Mental Health Monday.
Thank you very much for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.